Welcome back to the Marketing Podcast, where we discuss marketing science, case studies that reveal successful marketing techniques, and strategic marketing analysis, where we model the data and turn it into financial forecasts so you have predictable revenue. I'm your host, Brandon White, and this is Marketing. Well, here's what we're going to do today. You have a new branding bootcamp. You've worked with major banks. You've worked with Disney, Chase. I don't know. I could keep going. I had a list here. You Disney, JP Morgan, Chase, Choice Hotels, banks, some other banks.
Yep.
And what we'll do is you can give the listeners a little bit of background on yourself real quick, and then we can jump into your branding bootcamp, which you're going to do a mini class on what that is. And then we have some time. I want to end with a segment on loyalty programs, because you have a ton of experience in loyalty programs. It's everybody from the Fortune 500 to the small brands want to implement them, and most don't implement them correctly.
Yep, exactly.
So okay. Why don't we jump in with a little bit of your background?
Awesome. So you and I met in grad school, right? In an executive MBA program. And we were, what we thought were kind of in the middle of our careers, but it obviously was very early. So I had started my career at Walt Disney World in entertainment and then in marketing. That's where I actually learned branding to begin with, right? It was like a masterclass in branding working at Disney back then. And then I went on to work with a tech startup and found myself at Bank One back in corporate America. And it was when they were pitching for the Disney Visa credit card. So I worked on that and helped on a really small team win that deal and build the loyalty program and launch the card, which is still very successful 20 years later. And then worked with a lot of other brands. So IHG and Starbucks and Toys R Us and BP and you name it, just a lot of different things. Did some investment decisioning at Chase on the new customer acquisitions and marketing growth team, and then really wanted to get back into hospitality. So I found myself at Choice Hotels with the incredible privilege of running a global hotel loyalty program called Choice Privileges and all of its partnerships. And then from there went on to lead their marketing organization before I left and then went to a specialty bank in Orlando, that small sort of boutique bank that invests in fintech technology. And so I was honored enough to be their chief marketing officer. And now here I am. I have my own marketing firm, specializing in being a fractional CMO and using my superpowers around branding, loyalty, and partnership. So I feel incredibly grateful that I am at this point in my career to where I get to pick to do cool things with cool companies and cool people.
Yeah, well, that's awesome. Well, let's jump into your boot camp. You have this branding boot camp. You're going to take us through a mini masterclass. So I'm excited about that. And I know the listeners will love this, because branding is one of those things that sort of this nebulous idea, but super important. And if not done correctly, it can really affect your revenue and then ultimately your business.
Right. Right. So let's start with what branding is and isn't. Right. So when people hear, oh, wow, you can help us create a brand, right? Develop our brand from scratch because it's a brand new company or brand new product. Or they're in this sort of evolution or transformation. Maybe they've acquired other companies, they've been acquired, right? There's some sort of inflection point that creates this need to reassess the brand, right? A brand is not just jumping into a tagline or a logo, right? It's really stepping back and being very methodical, which is how I designed my Butler Branding Bootcamp, to really start at the basics and walk people through. And what's interesting is people get really anxious and they're like, okay, great. So thanks for the first session. I went on ChatGPT and I came up with 10 different taglines. What do you think? And I'm like, that's fabulous. Ask me in, I don't know, 4 weeks, whatever it may be, right? And the bigger the company, the more length of time it takes, right? So what I typically do is I start with what's the master brand, the overall brand of the entire company. And most of the time, there are sub brands that need to then feed into that, that so they ladder up to the master brand. So you start with the branding of the master, And then you have to go through a lot of the same exercise for each of the sub brands to make sure that there's complete alignment. And only then do you start writing actual marketing copy. So let me give you a flavor for what's in the bootcamp, right? So first you think about the brand identity. And within the brand identity for me, and by the way, people have a whole bunch of different names and different processes, and it will all get you to a similar outcome, right? This is just how I found it to be incredibly effective with nonprofits, for-profit companies, startups, individual entrepreneurs, bigger organizations, et cetera, right? So within that brand identity, I start with the competitive framework. And it sounds so basic, right? You draw a line down the center of a page. You draw another line across the page. You got four quadrants, right? You say, okay, from here to here, what are the bookends, right? So I'm just going to use my company as an example, right? So that I'm not sharing things that perhaps aren't necessarily public yet, right? So for me, because I'm focusing on just a couple of my superpowers, I'm not an end-to-end marketing agency. I'm not trying to do everything soup to nuts. So I would call that full service agency versus a very focused agency, right? So I put me on the focused end of that, right? And then I think about, for me, I'm not just going to walk in and assess a loyalty program and give you my opinion and then write down something and drop it on your desk and leave, right? My whole thought is you bring me in for whatever the evaluation may be. It could be partnerships, it could be branding. I'm not just going to consult. I'm actually have the ability and I'm willing to, if you let me, then implement those changes. Because again, I think that people feel like, okay, that's great. Thanks for telling me how to do this. And then they throw it in a drawer and they go, yeah, I have no idea how to do that. Or I don't have the time. I don't have the capacity, and right? So all these different things, bandwidth, skill, whatever. So for me, I see that in that quadrant between consultant and practitioner, I tend to be more in that sort of, I'm a focused agency and I lean more towards practitioner than I do consultant. And if you want to engage me just consultant, that's fine too, right? But you would be amazed at how difficult it is for companies just to define those two lines, right? When I joined an organization, it was the bank actually, my first week, they said, we got to produce a press release for this partnership that we're doing. We invested in this company. Help us rewrite the boilerplate language. That's the sort of about the company at the bottom of the press release, right? It took us a week and a half. Why? Because we didn't know what space we wanted to be. We were no longer this company that was established 60 years ago that then had a national bank charter added to it. We're something different. So what is this something different? We were trying to write the marketing copy before we'd gone through the branding work. So just deciding where in the competitive framework you want to sit is very difficult. Sometimes what I do is I work with my clients and I say, let's talk about your competitors. Who are your biggest competitors? Great. Let's plot them. And then let's see, where are you relative to them? Giving that context really helps then as you start writing the brand framework, because the first element within sort of what I call the brand mountain, right, which is this whole layering effect, is what's the competitive framework? What's the space in which I claim to be playing in, right? So for me, boutique marketing firm offering fractional CMO services, pretty much, right?
Can we use another example for a listener, like a product? Can you use Apple? I mean, you didn't work there, so we're not giving up anything, right?
Yeah. So you tell me this, what do you think the two lines would be for Apple? I'm going to put you through my bootcamp. How about that? Yes. Using Apple.
I don't know the two lines with, I don't know that, Apple targets an avatar, right? People who think different. So they figured that out from the beginning.
Right.
They don't compete on functions and features. They have great functions and features and right. They have great speed and all those things, but that's not how they compete. They compete on lifestyle. So they're probably, those two things are between actual functional products that are more just around pure performance.
Right.
And then lifestyle brand.
Yes.
And they tend to be more towards lifestyle brand than they do performance, although they have products that perform exceptionally well.
Yeah. So yes, and I'm going to do a yes and, which is I build upon things, right? So, but not lifecycle brand to the point of Jimmy Buffett Margaritaville.
No, right? That's just pure entertainment.
So right, well, but it is a lifestyle. It is a
lifestyle brand, yes.
Right, because I've got all the things that make me feel as though I'm immersed in the experience of my everyday life. Right.
Right.
Yes. So, but it's incredibly hard, but also incredibly important to get that strategic, that competitive framework correct first and foremost. And then typically what you want to do is, where's the brand now? And then in 3 years, where do I want it to be? Because most likely you want to give your brand room to grow, right? Give it some breathing room, because you want to set this and have it be good for at least like 3 years. So there's probably an evolution. There's a growth plan, right? Of new businesses, new products, new lines of business, new locations, et cetera, that may influence the brand, and giving it the breath and space to do that. Also, typically what I do within that competitive framework is I'll go and I'll start studying all those competitors and start to really look at how are they communicating their brand and in what way, so that I have a sense in the back of my mind about what space are these other competitors taking? And is there enough white space in where we want to take this brand for us to have something ownable and distinct, right? So that's the first part of brand identity. The second piece is the mountain. And the mountain has multiple layers, right? So bottom of the mountain, this whole competitive framework, right? So it defines me versus the space.
Do you define the customer there too? Yet?
No, not yet. Not yet. The customer does fit in. Yes. And actually what's interesting is within the mini bootcamp, it's not something that has been a part of it. It is in a fuller bootcamp. And what I found right now is that companies have wanted to focus on the mini part, which is why the sort of optional or bigger part of the bootcamp includes within the brand identity work, the target audience, which could be target audiences, right? Because you're going to have multiple lines of business likely underneath a master brand. And then the personas that brings to life each of the target audiences. So you can really think, and there's clarity and singularity, regardless of how many people work within your organization, that when I talk about this target audience, I'm talking about this person. I'm talking about Chris, the sports fanatic who goes to every single Notre Dame football game, right? And I know exactly what Chris is all about. I know where he lives, what he drives, what he sounds like, how he likes to vacation. I know what Chris does. I know, right? I know everything about Chris in and out, and everybody else does too. But within the mini bootcamp, no, not necessarily required, but I do think it's incredibly necessary, especially if you're starting out with a brand new brand, right? So within that mountain, after I've got the competitive framework, then I have core equities. So basically, at the simplest level, what do you do, right? So for my brand, I create marketing narratives. I create short and long-term marketing strategies, right? Like basic stuff, right? Then you kind of go up the pyramid and you go, well, why does someone care? Like, what's the benefit to the client of what I do day in and day out? And then that's where typically that's not a part of a brand process when companies sort of define that, right? With my clients, I find that it's incredibly effective because it starts to get to this is how we would sell the brand, and you translate from brand purism to actually marketing copy, marketing speak. How do we explain this? What I've also found is if you can't explain the benefit to the client, is it really important that that's what you do in the first place? So it's also a really good gut check, right? Does someone care? Would someone buy it? Do they need it? But if you can't explain why someone why it's a benefit to the client, then it's probably not worth selling in the first place, or you're doing the wrong thing, right?
So most people, are some people can't describe that?
Some people cannot. So, or some people say, we do, what's a good example? Like we produce specialty blah, 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 blah for this industry. And you go, okay, so why is that important to someone? Okay, well, because we're the only ones who can do it, or this is the only place where they can get it done. Okay, great. Well, then help me understand, what is it that you do that leads to that benefit? There's a corollary between the two that I try to connect the dots. And by the way, there are different approaches on how to do this brand mountain work. I've interviewed different individuals within the organization, especially if it's a larger organization and there's a head of each line of business that's part of the sub brands. Or if it's a smaller organization, or if they're really good communicators, I take a handful of people who are the people who are most influential within the organization and closest to the brands, and work with them collaboratively to do this. And it's no more than like six people, because let's face it, we all know that if you get more than actually six or more in a room, it's really difficult to find alignment. But at the end of the day, you have to build a brand that everyone can get behind, and everyone will be consistent in the communication because they buy into what this is. And it feels like it's reflective of truly what they do and the product that they're closest to. So for me, my job isn't necessarily force words in people's mouths. It's really to unearth what's there in the first place and help them articulate in a way that they haven't done so today, and then put the marketing wrapper around it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. What comes to mind as you're talking is you used the example of the one of the mergers in the bank when they couldn't even write the description at the end of the press release. I mean, that's a major issue, especially for a big company. It's a major issue for a small company too. I mean, and in order to get your head around that, I guess, do you have to bring the CEO or CMO in at some level? Because I mean, do product managers, I mean, it's different, right? In a small company, I can't imagine you can't have the CEO and senior C-level people here who are driving that. And then in a bigger company, maybe the product managers are allowed to set that tone?
I think depending upon the levels within the organization, the product managers may be too, they're closest to the product. They may be too removed from the actual business strategy, potentially, right? What I will say without sharing a lot within the bank is that there were legacy of we're a community bank, but we feel like we've outgrown the definition of a community bank. We're not a credit union for sure, but we're not a full service JP Morgan either. And then there was whole element around the investment and focus on fintech. To better banking in general, right? And I think to what you're asking, it was finding alignment within the organization by having these conversations about what's our competitive framework. Are we this or are we this? And also saying we're not XYZ, right? But then also, if you think about it, organizations also have board of directors. And there may not be alignment within the board of directors as to what this is. And all these things start to percolate at the same time to where you go, wow, okay, this is a way to get everybody back on the same page. What do we want to be when we put all our efforts against this? How do we want to evolve? And then have that be a rallying cry to make sure that that's everybody's shared vision. Have you experienced that, by the way? Have you seen where there's potentially misalignment either within a board or between the board and its leadership in terms of what are they? Where do they fit in a competitive? Oh,
I think that happens in startups all the time, Sheila, and it mainly happens because they're not aligned. And having been a VC, think I get to say from that side of the table, but if everybody's not aligned on the economic front, then it creates all sorts of havoc, because some people are trying to monetize their investment, accelerate their ROI, and the business founders and or group their team is trying to build, quote unquote, this brand to survive, you know, 25 or 30 years or whatever, 50 years. And then you get this. And then you also have all these different opinions if it wasn't defined in the beginning.
Yes.
Because what you're really asking, like, this is what humans go through, Sheila. It's, who am I?
Yes, exactly. Right. Who am I? What do I want to be in the next 3 years?
Right. And where am I? Where am I? Go ahead.
Yes. Yeah. Like, how do I put that in a category?
And where do I fit?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. It happens. I think it happens all the time. I've been through rebranding exercises with myself, my own companies, and other companies, some nonprofits. And it's very hard. They can't, you think you can whip it out in a day.
No.
But you really can't, unless you already have, somebody has it in their head and they just haven't documented it.
Right.
I mean, which is sometimes possible for founders, but not always.
And if it's in their head, they may not have articulated it to anyone else, and other people may have different ideas in their heads too, right?
Well, that's the problem. If you don't have a brand brief and you can't distribute it, and everybody's giving a different message, then everybody in their daily job is doing something. I don't think people understand that, Sheila, is that this brand thing is not just an outward facing thing. It actually affects everybody who work in your company, who are doing something today. And if they think it means something, then all the work they're doing and producing is in support of what they believe, which may not be the brand in the first place.
Totally. 100%. Yes, exactly. Right. So within that sort of brand mountain, right? So after you talk through the competitive framework, sort of what we do as core equities, and then why does someone care, right? What's the benefit to the client? Then you can, if you want, to define a layer, which is, what's our expertise? What are we actually really good at? Again, sort of focusing, I'm going to do this, but I'm not going to do this, right? Because you're not going to be everything to everyone. And in the same way, you want to define a target audience, because not everyone is in your target audience. And believe me, I have worked within organizations and their target audience was the 99%.
I know,
that's not a target.
I know nobody wants to do that though, because it's scary.
Because, oh my God, I might miss someone. I might miss a customer, right?
I feel like that too.
But when you don't define the target, how will they know you're talking to them? Right. And in the same way, if I say, here's my expertise, I want to be known for these things, this is what I'm good at, it also says I'm not going to do these other things. Yes. Do I know some about SEO? Yes. Am I an expert? No. Can I Avengers assemble and bring in someone if someone says, by the way, as part of the marketing strategy is our fractional CMO, I want this to be a component of it. Great. I got people, right? But when I think about expertise and what Butler Marketing Group is, that is not one of the things I'm putting on the page, right? So anyway.
Yeah,
so
that scares people though. But I have to say, once you get over that hump and you do it, everything else opens up. But I will say this, you do have to make sure that it's a big enough market. You used the word white space. I would say that the market as it relates to value and numbers of units or people, mm-hmm. or companies is big enough that you can actually make money. And that is part of the branding process, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. So then from that, I go into core identity. So at the end of the day, if I'm going to talk about my brand, what are the four, maybe five things that are really, really important for me to communicate? And by the way, if you think about a mountain, right, it's very broad at the bottom and you're climbing up and it's getting a little bit more challenging as you get up. In the same way, the base of this brand starts with the very functional and rational stuff, right? This is what I do. This is the space that I occupy, right? The higher that you get, the more you're getting into the very intangible, right? Because it brands have a strong emotional element to it, right? The brands that really resonate with you, Disney, I'm a big Mickey nerd, right? Disney holds a place in my heart that Target will never hold for me, right? There's an emotional connection to I have with the Disney brand. And so the higher that you go up my brand mountain, the closer that you get to that sort of intangible and emotional. This core identity is one of those spaces, right? To where it's almost like the tipping point to go into the higher intangible things. So for my brand, the things are results and data driven, because I'm going to start with data. I'm going to form everything with the data and results that I have and infuse that into the go forward strategy of a brand, of a marketing plan, of an optimization plan, whatever, a loyalty strategy, right? A new partnership. Creativity, being strategic, and being connector. So I think a big part of my DNA as a professional is connecting brands. It's connecting people. It's connecting ideas, right? All those things. So for my business, those are the four elements that really become the core identity of what my brand is all about, of what Butler Marketing Group is all about, right? And then from there, I start to describe the personality. And I don't know if you've ever done this exercise, but so people get a little stuck on brand personality. Again, I think it's really important to define what it is and what it's not, right? So is your brand cheeky, but it's not snarky or rude necessarily, right? All these different things. But the exercise
is there a menu? Is there a menu of those?
No, but this is where you start to think about a persona, right? If you were a brand, if your company was a person, and think about its competitors, and they went to, I don't know, a dinner party, what would they talk about? What car would they drive? What would they like to, what would they be drinking? What would be their most recent vacation? All these different types of things. So think about Visa, MasterCard, American Express, and Discover. They're all at a party. What do you think each would say? What would American Express be talking about?
They seem to be more professional and corporate.
Right? They could be talking about the law firm where they work. They could be talking about their most recent European vacation or cruise that they took, right? They probably drove a nice car to the party, right? Maybe they're sipping bourbon straight. I don't know, right? What do you think Visa is talking about?
I think that's the average in America. It's the average American.
Right? What do you think they drove to the party? Are they drinking a red wine blend? You know, Discover, right?
I have no idea.
Whatever these types of things are, like people spend time talking about the personality, right? And the personality is important because it then helps inform thoughts around the marketing voice that you have in the copy. What lens are you writing it from? It can inform the visual identity. If you're thinking about either you don't have a logo yet, or you're thinking about changing your logo, the colors that you use for your brand, the fonts, right? So are you a sort of classic brand? Are you a formal brand? Are you more informal? Are you more casual or conversational even, right? I would pick different fonts if I were to then go into the brand work and create the whole visual identity. It would be very different depending upon how you define the personality, right? So then from that, I go into what's the promise? At the end of the day, what does someone get by engaging in your business? What's truly the promise? And then what is the effect to your clients of that promise? So mine, at least right now, by the way, these are probably, I think, the two hardest things within the entire pyramid to get right. So my promise right now for my company, Butler Marketing Group, is marketing that leaves a legacy. That's what I really want to create for my clients. Something that is long-lasting, that is distinct for them, and that really resonates with their clients and customers in a meaningful way. And I think that the end effect for the clients for buying into that brand promise is that they grow, evolve, and transform, which that's what companies are seeking, right? Isn't that why they brand their businesses, they brand their products, and they create these marketing campaigns? It's to grow, evolve, and transform, right? So you take those two things, and then what you say is, at the end of the day, what makes my product or my company completely different? What is the true point of difference? And I don't think that's any more than one or two words.
Like what type of words?
So I'm going to go back to an example back in the early part of my career, right? So, and I don't think these are the points of difference anymore. And I would think a consumer could have picked these out back in the day. So in the 90s, right? So I was there at Disney during the era of Michael Eisner. And there was a focus on, I think it was 20% growth every year for 10 years straight. That was a commitment. That is very difficult to achieve. So theme parks, new theme parks were opening, new resorts were opening. The cruise line was launching as a brand new business, et cetera, right? So thinking about how do you explain why a guest should go to each of the four Disney parks or cruise on the cruise line, which family cruising was not a thing. Everyone was like, what do you mean families are going to take a cruise? Families don't take a cruise, right? That's like, no one does that in the cruise business. They were like, why would anyone do this? And Disney defined the whole family cruising experience, right? So the brand essence of the cruise line back in the day was escape. Just the basic point of difference, escape. Why would I take a cruise over going to a Disney theme park? Magic Kingdom was all about fantasy, right? You're immersed in this land. You park your car in the parking lot and you have to take a ferry boat or a monorail. There's a lake. You can't just walk from your car, right? You're immersed into this fantasy world, right? Epcot was all around discovery at the time, discovery of foreign cultures and science and so forth, right? So you think about the point of difference. Mine is a unique perspective. And it's a unique perspective because I've worked in tech startups, because I've worked in Fortune 100s, because I've worked in financial services and hospitality, right? So I just come from a different lens. That informed my brand logo to look like a kaleidoscope because it's a different point of view. It's a different way to see something, right? So that basically is the first part of the bootcamp, right? So that's just around brand identity. So then you go into the platform. What's the brand platform, right? So you've got a couple of things. One is you've got the brand idea, which is two part. It's your elevator pitch, 10 seconds or less, Brandon, as you remind us and teach us. And then the other part is it's essentially the positioning that you have, right? How do you describe this in sort of bite-sized pieces, but longer than the 10 seconds, right? That's your brand idea. Then you've got a strategic statement of value. Like, why do I care? But this is where you start to take the brand work from the mountain and you start to then sort of morph it into this is becoming more marketing speak, even though it may not be the final copy that you would put in a press release on your LinkedIn page, on your website, in your email, right? But it gets to that essence, right? It's the connective tissue between the two. And then you take the four core identity elements and you create now these narrative themes. So if I'm results and data driven, to me, that's about unlocking potential by using results, using data, right? When I think about being strategic in my brand, that narrative theme is all around being the storyteller of your brand. In the creative element, it's around being imaginative. and being the connectors all around brand synergy. And I recognize that synergy is an often used word and sometimes well-liked and sometimes not liked, right? But it becomes those overarching narrative themes. And that's really the essence of the bootcamp. What happens is at the end of that, you still just have high-level marketing, like narrative themes, which are a couple now sentences when you take those themes and you write out, okay, what does that mean in terms of copy? Tell me, what does really storytellers of a brand journey really mean, right? Even when you have that, that still may not be enough for a client to take that and say, okay, great, thanks a lot, bye, right? Which is where the practitioner comes in, because they may need help in actually taking that and implementing that into a real marketing copy, because that's just the tip of things. You can't necessarily take three sentences about being a brand storyteller and then infuse that into an entire website with multiple pages. People don't know how to do that. So if that's the help that people need, then that's where you sort of leave the boot camp and take that as the foundation, and then truly then work through your marketing content and your marketing copy.
You mentioned something about logos, and people get caught up in logos. Do you think is there need to be a meaning behind the logo? I mean, people spend a lot of time on that.
That is a great question. I personally like that brands have an element of the voice sounds like the brand, because when I read it or I hear it, it sounds like what I would expect the brand to say if it were a person talking to me, right? And in the same way, I like the visual elements to also be very reflective of the brand. So to me, I would like to find meaning. By the way, will most people look at my logo and say, oh, that's a kaleidoscope? Oh, that's because she has a neat perspective? Nope. And it doesn't have to be that literal, right? Even if the colors are reflective of your brand personality, that may be enough depending upon what you're working on, right? It's interesting, we haven't touched on this, but naming a brand, right? So naming a brand, I picked my name, right? But there, you know, I could have picked something that's representative of the whole brand of a unique perspective. I could have made up a brand new word. I could have put two words and put them together, which is frankly easier to find a URL if you create a sort of like mashed up word. You can probably find a URL much more easily or cheaply. You know, you have all these different ways in which you can approach the actual naming of the company in the same way that you can the visual identity. Is it something that is historic, reflective of the location where you are? Is it emotive? Is it literal? Right? You could do all sorts of things. What do you think is most effective when you think about visual brand identities and logos? Do you have a preference?
I can't think of a preference. I tend to want it to be, I tend to always want there to be a story. Not because it needs to actually look like it. Like, I didn't know your logo was a kaleidoscope, but that there's some story behind it, because in general, what that allows you to do is, one is it allows your people to have a story to tell people, which are effectively your part of your sales and marketing. And two is it allows your marketing and sales department to tell stories around it, if even subtly. Right. And now you've given a conversation starter versus just some random thing. And some brands, I think, Sheila, you don't know for a long time what it means. I mean, Tesla is a good example, naming all their cars. Mm-hmm. I mean, he named it, all the models spell sexy. Now, someone could be like, oh, you know, that's stupid, but just got us to talk about it. And so, I mean, it's the S, it's the X, it's the Y. And there's stories about every feature in that car. There's Joe mode. I don't know if that's Joe Rogan, his friend, or another Joe, that makes it quiet in the back, right? There's the biohazard mode, which is, in case we're in a nuclear war, it literally pressurizes itself and is like cleaner than a a surgical room. All these stories that I just told are all part of that brand. Now, whether he or the group purposely did that, I don't know, but it is reflective of him for sure. Yes. I think Steve Jobs did the same thing at Apple. A lot of this stuff has to be, in my opinion, Sheila, driven initially from the founders. And it's amazing to me how many times when I've talked to a company and I'm like, hey, can I see your brand brief? They can't produce a brand brief. Mm-hmm. And once you can't produce the brand brief, I don't understand how you can have consistency. And once you don't have that, the brand is lost. I mean, I think one of the things that I learned, Sheila, in the startup world where I tend to function more, well, mostly all that early stage companies and then SMB companies, not multi-billion dollar like Chase things, is that you're in this race for speed and it is very hard to come in and say, well, we're going to build this brand brief. It's like, I just raised money. I've got a clock ticking that basically is clock ticking all the way around. We need to get customers. So it's sort of this, the chicken or the egg problem, but just doing basic brand work. I don't know, you know, I'm not saying you need to go through 6-month exercise, but going through basic brand work, which your framework talks about, will just give you fonts, colors, feelings, and just that actually makes you look professional.
Promises, words, right? Yes, exactly. And focuses people, right? You know, it's interesting when I talked about how people are like, oh my God, what's our logo? What's our tagline? Pick that and then try to force everything else that I talked about in that Butler Brand Bootcamp framework. Good luck, right? Because you just picked a corner and you just blocked yourself into that corner versus giving this brand space to grow over time, right? And still have whatever you define as the brand to be true, right? So let me hit on a couple other things. So within that mini bootcamp, I mentioned how there may be a master brand plus the sub brands underneath it. So once you define that brand mountain for the master brand, you then go through and say, okay, for this subdivision, it's not all these things. So what of the master brand do we need to take out that doesn't fit with this sub brand? And you do that for every single sub brand that you have. You do that same exercise around the positioning, the elevator pitch, the narrative themes, and then the overarching sort of detailed, like 3 sentences or more narrative themes for each of those sub brands. And then go back and gut check and say, is this still all true of the master brand? Is there anything that we missed in the master brand now that we've talked through all these that we need to make sure that is flushed out, right? So that's all part of just the mini bootcamp. If people needed more work beyond that, it's, as I mentioned, the target audiences and the profiles, which is part of the brand identity. Adding within that whole idea around positioning and pitch and narrative themes, any future state influences in the next 3 years that can impact your brand? Is it a political cycle for a presidential election? What may be economic elements that could influence? What are cultural things that could influence the brand? Governmental new laws that could come into effect, right? Around privacy or data sharing, right? All those different things that could influence your brand to where you step back and go, oh, wait, are we prepared for these things? Are we positioning ourselves in such a way that when a new regulation comes in around communication, that we can no longer make this brand claim, or you know, do we need to pivot, right, before we pin ourselves into a corner? There's also an element around a whole brand charter that we haven't talked about. And some companies believe in it and will put it on their website. They may have it within their building, within HRs, which is around like values. What do we believe as a brand? What's our mission? What are we doing? What's our vision? What do we really want to be, right? I think Microsoft's vision a long, long, long time ago, and the vision is supposed to be something like, I'm always going to pursue it, but I may never achieve it, but it's a worthwhile pursuit. I believe Microsoft's vision a long time ago was a computer on every desk, in every company, in every home. That's a worthwhile pursuit. And if someone says, why are you doing what you're doing? That's a rallying cry, right? For everyone to know we're all singularly going in this direction. So those would be elements of a brand charter. And then the sort of brand communication is what I talked about before, which is where you take the marketing and you really put it into action by infusing it into all of your marketing channels, as well as not just your owned marketing channels or your website and your email, but also your earned, right, around social media. So LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, X, right? And then paid as well.
Yeah,
so that's bootcamp.
Well, it's
it won't take 6 months, but it won't take six minutes either.
No, it is more complicated than I think people make it. And I want to go back to the logo example as a lesson I learned. I got early on, my brother and I did a fishing clothing company, and lucky enough to have a guy, Brian Leggett, who had was the co-founder at the time of this company called 180s in Baltimore, that did the one piece earmuff, and he had patented it, and they had it was a great business. It was seasonal and had some troubles, but a great business in general. And he walked my brother and I through a brand exercise when we came out with this brand called Lateral Line. And Lateral Line is the line that runs down the side of a fish that senses everything. And it just made sense. It hadn't been done before. Nobody had anything close to that. And we designed this really complicated, if you will, logo. And I remember him coming in, and when we got to that section, because all the pieces that you said, we couldn't even do the logo until we did what you call the mountain work, because you can't build the logo unless you understand all of that in the first place. And not everybody understands that, including graphic artists. But a lot of graphic artists who are actually good at what they do will ask for the brand brief, because that's how they're going to come up with a logo. But he said, well, that logo is absolutely not going to work. And I remember thinking, what do you mean it's not going to work? So my brother and I said, it's cool. And he said, it won't embroider right. And mm-hmm. we were like, it won't embroider right. But these are the things that, it wouldn't embroider right. So when you put that on something, it's not going to work, which means you're not going to be able to convey your brand correctly. In our case, it was too complicated, and we dumbed it down to literally lines. And it was just a silhouette sort of thing. My brother and I, at first, were like, this is never going to work. This is just way too simple. But in the end, it supported everything we did. The colors supported what we were going after. But just that little simple exercise, it took weeks, literally, to get it down to that, which exemplified our brand, which the line was orange. And the line was orange because our brand was about action and energy, and orange releases oxygen in your brain and through some studies that have been done and gives you energy. It's just that that's what it does. And that's why we picked it. But we would never have gotten there had we not been able to do the work to actually build the brand from the ground up. So I'm only saying that for listeners who are listening to you and saying, well, that sounds like a lot of work. I'm not sure how important it is. It in fact is super important at some point to at least start with a foundation. You don't need to overthink it. Big companies have time and money to do it. Small companies don't have as much time and don't have as much money, but they still need to do the same thing.
Yes,
and
exactly.
It's really important to do that.
You know what? Even in larger organizations, when there's a merger or an acquisition, right? You and I have lived through those, and there are very distinct cultures. There are very distinct sort of brand values that each one had, and now they're merging the two. And it takes a lot of time and a lot of work to align and say, what is this new brand, right? There's a reason why one company was acquired or they merged together. There's a reason, there were benefits of that. That is a brand inflection point to go through this whole work. You could be a smaller, medium-sized business and you're in growth mode, and so you acquire something. that old brand is going away as on both sides, and you're describing what this new entity is. That's really important. It's also really important. So like I said, you don't want a lot of people within this process, but you need to take people through the journey and keep them informed as to what's going on and share from time to time so that when you're ready to roll this out, that people are starting to prepare themselves for change, right? There's a change management element within this. And at the end of the day, you want every single person within your organization to be a brand ambassador for this and be consistent in what you say and how you're writing the marketing copy. The brand element, if you think about the personality, should also be infused in the user experience of the website, right? All these different elements to where you don't necessarily you think that the brand is sort of sitting around here in marketing. When I worked at the tech startup, one of the elements that we did was make sure that the brand was infused in the look and feel and the UX of the site itself. And then helping, especially with venture capital pitches, preparing these entrepreneurs to describe what it is that they do and why is it important and why should they be getting funding. In similar in the way that, you know, you've been working through with me and others on the pitch deck, right? You need to understand what your brand is in the first place. How do you write a pitch deck in 11 pages without actually knowing how to articulate what your product is?
Yeah, it's very hard. It's very hard and very simple at the same time. But In order to get to that simple, it is hard. And you are right about the brand being when you merge. I was at AOL time. Well, I was at AOL when we merged with Time Warner, and it was utter failure, mainly because none of us understood what we were doing. Time Warner people came in and said, "Well, we're a media company. We do this," and we're like, "We're the internet. Like, media is over. Yep. This is the way you're going to do it." And nobody financially that made an enormous amount of sense, and a lot of people and I benefited too, made a lot of money from that initially, but from that merger. But the merger failed ultimately because there was a vision at the merger. There wasn't a vision and brand moving forward that was articulated through the organization. And that was lost. And once that was lost, we were all lost. So we all just did what we had been doing. If we were internet people, we did internet people. And then ultimately, when things got intermixed and the old media people came in, they basically killed a lot of the opportunity that was already being built there. And it was because nobody understood where we were going. And probably nobody was willing to make hard decisions because that brand that you're talking about building, it may drive that some of your people are no longer needed. That's just how it works.
That could be if that's where the brand is going.
Right. So, and it was terrible. I ultimately left, but it is true if you do any sort of merger. Well, that was a great summary of the bootcamp. I do want to touch on this just for a second because loyalty programs, which you are obviously an expert in, everybody wants to do them, but they're not always implemented correctly. And I just wanted to spend a few minutes, if you could go over just from a high level tips to offer people to say, hey, if you're thinking about a loyalty program, here's what you should be thinking about, whether that's tracking the data or how it's positioned, all of those things, because it's the technology exists on the internet to create loyalty programs.
Right.
The question is, can you get the loyalty program to actually work?
So, yes. And I would go back to why do you want a loyalty program, or why do you think you need a loyalty program, right? What do you want? What purpose do you want it to hold, right? So some companies use it as, I just want it as a sort of overarching theme for email campaigns, right? I'm just going to call it a loyalty program, but it's really just sort of an e-marketing strategy, right? Others say, well, I want to gather data about my customers so I can know who my customers are and I can target them. And perhaps if I learn a little bit about them, I could track their spend, maybe what day of the week they come, what they purchase. And I could even, if I so desire, then personalize and provide them offers that are relevant to them, right? Companies may say, I want a loyalty program because I want to build a deeper connection with my customer base. And so if I start to speak to them as a brand and I get to know them, then ideally they choose me over something else. And maybe if there's a hook within loyalty, such as points or extra benefits, like when you come in, you get a complimentary appetizer because you're part of the program, right? Or whatever it may be. At the end of the day, you need to have a reason for why do you want loyalty? I think I find it incredibly important that if you decide you want loyalty, that you should define, what do I want customers to do? Because loyalty serves as a vehicle to motivate your customers to behave in certain ways that drives the business forward. So do I want you to come on certain days of the week? Do I want you to come more often? Do I want you to spend more when you come to my store, my restaurant, my whatever, right? My hotel, my airline, all these types of things. So loyalty can be incredibly strategic as a tool to drive your business forward. It can become a sub brand within your company, right? A meaningful revenue driver. And you can augment the loyalty program with partnerships to reach a broader audience, to bring in more benefits to the program, et cetera. But I think you have to decide, what strategic business intent do you have with having a loyalty program? And then keep that in mind and focus that as you design your loyalty program. And think about, what do I want to know about my customers? How will I use that data? I think it's also helpful as a loyalty program, as you're tracking that data, to then be able to segment your customer base. Not all customers are the same. Do I shop at a certain store? Yes. Do I shop as much as someone else? No. If I'm that brand, I would rather over invest in someone else in the loyalty program than I would investing in me if I seem like I'm not incredibly engaged in the program. You can use the loyalty program to drive sort of lapsed people back into your brand, right? As long as they're not so lapsed that they're really completely out of touch with your brand in the first place, right? So I think it starts with the business strategy as a whole. What are you trying to achieve? What do you want customers to do? What data do you need from them? And how do you want to personalize that experience? There's a whole return on investment, right? To really have a strong P&L to understand, what are the costs of loyalty? What are the revenues that I'm driving? What are the net revenues after all that, right? So do you understand, how much am I willing to invest in this program and within these different customer segments?
No, I think that's a great summary. I just wanted listeners to have that. And the real takeaway is, you just can't throw up a loyalty program and hope for the best. It actually needs its own business plan or strategy around it. Yes. And you need to think about it. I know we won't talk about the name, but you and I were talking the other day, and there was a program, what they had, a loyalty program. They wanted to do something, but they actually weren't collecting the data in a way that they could get what they needed. And somebody there forgot that there's a back end data mart part of this that has to be done. So I'm only offering that to listeners. If you're listening right now and you have a loyalty program, or you thinking about one, that could even be a local little store in a, you know, doesn't have to be a chain. You still want to think it through and the implications of that, and having it and not being able to leverage it to get what you want, you might as well have just not done it, because ultimately that probably leads to poor customer satisfaction, which is a whole nother thing that we're not going to get into today. I've talked about it before in another episode, NPS, net promoter score. And if that basically goes down because you didn't implement something right, well, now you just got a host of problems. So I appreciate you summarizing that, Sheila, for all the listeners.
Absolutely. I mean, there are definitely some key pillars within loyalty, right? You need the actual program and benefits that are meaningful to customers, right? So you need to know your customer well enough. you do have the marketing element to it, but you also have the data piece of it. You've got the technology stack as well to make sure you've got a single source where all of your data is sitting, and then it's accessible and targetable and actionable, right? And then the reporting element. Just as its most simplistic level, you could probably add multiple more details within that.
Well, I just wanted to add a foundation for listeners out there who are doing that, which you did. And we could probably do a whole nother show, and maybe we will, on just loyalty programs.
Yep, totally.
Sheila, this has been great. If you were to just give three pieces of advice, you had to boil it down to a listener out there who has a company and is thinking about brand and brand positioning, what would you boil things down to, the three pieces of advice that you would give?
Don't rush. So that's your instinct, right? Is to rush that I don't have time for this. It's actually incredibly important because it does need to be the foundation of everything else that you're doing. It's helpful to have outside perspective. So I will tell you, the hardest brand that I've ever worked on is actually branding my own company, because it's me, right? I'm so close to it versus me helping guide people through the boot camp and really being a voice and playing it back with a lot of my clients. I'll push the limits. Because people say, like, oh, that's just semantics, right? And just normal conversation. Well, but it matters here. Words matter right now. And so I will say, is it this or is it this? And they're like, oh, I don't know. I don't know. I'm like, I don't think it's this, but I'm going to push you to the outer rim just to see how far I can get you to go. And then I'm going to rein you back in so that you know where the edges are, right? So I would say get some outside help. And then you got to be consistent. Once you settle on it, you can't just decide, I like this piece of it, but not this piece of it. And you can't have individuals doing that either. You got to be consistent over and over and over again, which is why when you go through this work around competitive framework and the mountain and all the other brain elements that we talked about, if it doesn't feel right, you're not going to be committed to it and you're not going to be consistent. So often in these sessions, it may take one session just to do competitive framework. And then you start the second session by going back and seeing, is there anything we need to change? And then two or three or four sessions on that whole brand mountain, especially depending upon how complex your brand is for master and sub brands, because you're going to live with this when it's all done. So you got to be consistent and make sure you get it right the first time.
I think those are three great pieces of advice. Where's the best place for listeners to find you?
So they can go to butlermg.com. They can reach me at Sheila@butlermg.com. And we talked about the branding a lot. We talked about loyalty some, but we also offer fractional chief marketing officer work. So there are companies that don't need a full-time chief marketing officer or a marketing leader, right? But they need someone to set the North Star, define the strategy, coach the team. They may need that 10, 20 hours a month, not full time. And so that's one of the things we offer as well.
Awesome. I'll put all that in the show notes. Sheila, thanks so much for taking the time, taking us through the boot camp, the loyalty program. It's been awesome.
Great to see you.
Bye, everyone.